RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Government must pour cold water on radical pine planting proposal. Yeah, Federated Farmers is calling for the government to urgently distance itself from a radical new pine planting proposal released by the Climate Change Commission late last week. Now, the proposal, this is a quote from Toby Williams, the proposal would see large swaths of productive farmland sacrificed in the name of emission reductions. And Federated Farmers Meat and Wool Chair Toby Williams is with us right now. Hi, Toby. How are you?
Hi, Paul.
Okay, so what's happening here? The Climate Commission not reading the room.
Well, the Climate Commission's charged with doing one job, and that's, you know, the government asks them, if we want to achieve these targets, what's it going to take? And they've come up with this absolutely mind-blowing proposal to plant 850,000 hectares of productive farmland and to pine forests just so we can appease our European friends.
Okay. Give us an idea of that amount of land. Can you quantify it? Can you help us visualize what that is?
Yeah, so Molesworth Station's the New Zealand's largest largest farm. That's 180,000 hectares, so it's five Molesworth Stations they're wanting to plant. Or if I take my home area in Gisborne, Wairoa region, we've got about 300,000 hectares of sheep and beef land. So that's planting the entire East Coast, all of the flats, everything that goes along with that, plus still finding another 500,000 hectares of areas to plant. So it is an absolutely staggering amount of land that they believe is a good idea so we can avoid paying an emissions tax to Europe.
Okay, not a fan of paying that. Here's another quote from you. New Zealand needs to have a serious conversation about these targets and how much they're going to cost us as a country, and I'm not just talking financial costs. What costs are you talking about, Toby?
Yeah, we're talking about the cost to our communities. You know, we look at our tourism. New Zealand's known for being a clean, green country where, you know, you drive around and we've got these amazing landscapes for producing food. All of a sudden, you know, if we start planting pine trees everywhere, we lose that aesthetic value. We lose the biodiversity that you find on farms. We have effectively a weed species that's non-native everywhere here. So we start to lessen what we have as a country, and it makes a big difference. You know, it's unlikely you would come into Gisborne and plant the entire area. So, but you know, where are we going to find these areas? And then what are we going to do with the people who are displaced? What are we going to do about the jobs? What are we going to do for an export revenue for this country? No one's thinking about how we pay our bills. At the moment, it's been very difficult. You know, as a country, we're not making any money. So, you know, this is going
that's
to reduce
not good.
The amount of- No, it's not. And, you know, and what we... You know, we hear that everybody in New Zealand wants new hospitals, we want better roads, we want all these cool things. We've got to find a way to pay for them all. And unless we're earning export revenue, we aren't, you know, we're not adding anything to our pot to be able to buy these things, to do what we want to as a country.
Do you think the hype around climate change is credible? I mean, it's a fundamental question, isn't it? I mean, we can dodge around all the issues and say, well, we should tweak this or tweak that. I mean, should we be doing or involved in this at all, Toby? Should we call time? We're not buying it anymore because Trump's in. He's not going to buy it.
Yeah, and that's a really good, really, really good point. As a farmer, we see climate change on a daily basis. I've been farming on this farm here for almost 20 years now, and the conditions from when I started to the conditions now are very different. We have much less frosts. We grow grass all year now. So there are opportunities within that. So I think if we're burying our head in the sand and saying it's not real, then that's probably not, you know, that accurate. However, we also need to look at, we're a tiny island nation down in the bottom of the Pacific. How our annual emissions as a country are dwarfed by the daily emissions out of China, India, and the United States of America. And we seem to have this belief, or we're told that, you know, by doing this, by planting, you know, 850,000 hectares of New Zealand farmland, we're going to do our bit for the world and we're going to make a big difference. Well, the reality is we're not. You know, we aren't going to move the needle. We know if we did do this, and if some of the politicians we understand actually think this is a good idea, if we did do this, then we're going to lose that food producing land. The world still needs that food that we produce. So one of the options we're going to be faced with as a less efficient country is either going to deforest, you know, potentially in South America, Central America, deforest more so they can grow those that extra food that the world wants. And the world becomes worse off because we've planted some pine trees just so we could appease, you know, some people with Swedish accents and things like that.
Hang on, I've got a Volvo, be careful. Is it an ego thing, do you think?
I think to a degree it is. If you've seen some of the stuff that's come out of COP, you know, and the impassioned plea from these guys in Azerbaijan, you know, an oil-producing nation of all places, you know, they are really hysterical about it. And it seems to be a very emotive subject. And it's hard to see why, when the big players aren't taking this seriously, why should one of the minnows be doing more than our fair share, effectively. If the United States and China and India don't want a bar of this, or Russia don't want a bar of this, then we need to be considering what can we do that's still moving ourselves forward so we're doing something. How do we make ourselves more efficient? How do we produce food more efficiently? But also, how do we grow our economy and show the world we are doing it? Because, you know, our offshore customers are demanding we do stuff. The Nestle's of this world and the, you know, it's a frontier, and our big companies are moving down this pathway. So we're going there. But it doesn't help, you know, the fact that we get into these hysterics about, you know, the world's burning. And I suppose in our neck of the woods, in Pacific, we've got, you know, some of these small island nations that are, you know, sea levels rising, and they are starting to, you know, to be struggling for a home. So...
yeah, well, no, that's what people say, Toby. But is that a fact? I don't know.
Yeah, we've seen it here because I live on the beach, effectively.
So the sea level's gone up as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, it has. We've got a lot more damage on our roadsides now, because the main road goes up State Highway 35, than I've ever seen in my life in the last two or three years. And we might have only gone up a few centimetres, but it's been enough, you know, to eat the sand out a bit higher, which then causes more problems as we go through. So, I mean, I'm not... you know, a massive believer that, you know, we're in a cycle of climate change, you know, and the fluctuations, and the area we're measuring it in is a very small snapshot of you know, our actual real-world measurements.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, but we don't know what's causing that. That's the other thing.
Well, I'm not a climate scientist.
I know you're not, but I'm telling you, we don't actually know, do we?
No, we don't.
It may be a natural process if it's happening at all, but you say that you've seen it, so I'll take you on face value on that. But we don't know why it is, so we can do all the we can twist ourselves up, contort ourselves in all sorts of weird shapes, try to punch square things into round holes, and it may not have anything to do with that.
Well, there's always that possibility. I think as a farmer, we've seen the changes. Like I said, we've got a lot less frosts here now. I grow grass all year round. We get to about May and the grass would stop growing through till about August. So there are some benefits for farming, you know, under this new thing. We've got to be adaptable and we've got to be able to move with it. And, you know, the climate's always changing. We've never had a period of stability through any point of history from the beginning of the planet. It's always been changing. So it's about how we best adapt to that.
Okay, the Climate Commission is saying that in terms of dairy cows, 12 to 15% fewer, and this is up to 2035, so that's, 9 years away, not far away, and a drastic, they say, 18 to 24% fewer sheep and beef stock. So what does that do for the rural sector, those numbers, those percentages?
It destroys our rural communities. I mean, You struggle to start getting shearers. Vets don't, you know, you don't have vets. There's no viable businesses to be able to have around that anymore. I think the bigger question is, what does it do for our food in our country? What does it do? What does it mean for you guys in the cities? We've gone through this last winter and we've found that meat prices have been really high and supermarkets couldn't get, you know, enough New Zealand meat to fulfill the shelves, so they brought in Australian meat, and people were blown away by the fact we grow all this meat and milk. Why do we have to import Australian product? What we'll see if this
goes ahead. That's a very good point, Toby. I was in the supermarket the other day, and I was blown away by the amount labelled of Australian product. And I thought, what's happening here?
Yeah, so that's come about because of just low supply through the winter months in New Zealand. So the lamb and beef, you know, is this in short supply? And if we really wanted to dig into that, which we won't, some of the buying, the way those supermarkets buy there, they are very perverse in terms of the person supplying them. So there's big penalties. If you go over a certain weight, you lose a lot of money. So people don't want to supply it. So they've only got themselves to blame to a degree. Okay. However, it doesn't help you as a consumer. And as a farmer, we want to be able to get the best returns we can out of what we produce. So selling on the international market is our best thing, our best avenue to, you know, to grow our revenue and to earn export dollars. However, if we reduce our volumes of stock like they propose in this Climate Change Commission report, then New Zealanders aren't going to be able to afford our own food. We're going to be importing, we're going to become net importers of food. And it's a great example of this over in Africa and South Africa, you know, when Zimbabwe used to be the breadbasket of Africa. They used to grow so much food. And we saw some political upheaval there through the 1980s. And all of a sudden they went from there in the breadbasket of Africa to the basket case of Africa. We do run a risk of turning our country into a complete basket case where we can't afford the basic things. We've been through an inflationary period that everybody agrees was terrible. Well, imagine if we went into hyperinflation like they do in Zimbabwe. What are we going to do? How are we going to feed ourselves? How are we going to build hospitals, look after people? These are all the questions that the Climate Change Commission don't look at. They look at how do we tick this target, and we don't worry about anything, any of the other consequences of it. This is what we need to look at to be, achieving our new, in inverted commas here, our new Paris Accord targets, because it wasn't so long ago, 5 or 6 years ago, they were talking about only 300,000 hectares. So they've added an extra 500,000 hectares.
All right. Only got a short time left. The badly broken ETS, as you describe it, what needs to happen with that?
Yeah, we need to have some changes made to the ETS to eliminate the ability for polluters to offset 100% of their emissions. And, you know, when you're offsetting emissions, all we're doing is putting a band-aid across it saying, well, look, there's nothing to see here. We're good Joe Blog citizens, that we are now emissions neutral. When in fact they haven't changed any behaviour. All we've done is buy some farms, put some pine trees in, and you know, take the carbon that they've been emitting back out of the air. So our belief is that the ETS is set up to change behaviour. When it's when it's permissive, you can offset 100% of your emissions. There's no incentive to actually change your behaviour. So part of that is having, you know, a carbon price that's really, really high. So it becomes actually a penalty. So people want to change their behaviour. But we've seen from the previous government, they had a bit of a tootie round with it and it collapsed the price, which was good for farmers because, we weren't just converting farms to pine trees just for carbon's sake. But we need to have some, you know, a sinking lid on how much you can offset your. Those are one of the things we'd like to see. So the ETS actually functions in the way that it was designed to do, change that behaviour, and then eventually we don't need an ETS anymore. We've transitioned our economy to a low emissions economy. We've ticked all the boxes. We've got no bills to pay up for the Paris Accord and things like that because we've done our bit.
All right, last question. You say the government should follow through on their campaign promise and limit on-farm conversions to forestry to protect local communities and food production. That was a promise, was it?
Was a promise, yeah. And they keep telling us that this change is coming and the changes are coming before Christmas. And what we've got a lot of farmers, there's a farm down in the south in Gore at the moment. It's about 16,000 hectares. And this is country, some of this country you can grow wheat on. You can grow barley on. And our understanding is that the owners are looking to plant this themselves and pine trees, and this is good food producing land. This isn't steep back country hills, and they want to put pine trees on it, and then they're putting pine trees on it potentially then to get around the rules and then sell it to a foreign company for, you know, for carbon revenue. What we need is the government to urgently announce their changes, you know, to their what can be registered within the ETS, and they're talking land class 1 through 5. So that's our easy country. We can drive tractors over and dairy farms and things like that to make it more difficult, or to make it so they can't claim carbon off that. You can still plant pine trees on it. If pine trees are going to be the most productive use for that paddock and you're going to get some great production timber off it, brilliant. But we need to take the carbon aspect out of it, which inflates, you know, the value for those trees.
Yeah, there's an inconsistency here, isn't there? Because we've got on one side people trying to rid our environment of introduced species, non-native species, dropping 1080 into the bush to do it, poisoning the bush. Yet everyone's happy to have, you describe them as a weed crop or a weed, pine trees everywhere. Does no one get the inconsistency?
Yeah, there's some irony, isn't it? If you go down to like North Otago and Central Otago now, they're flat out trying to get out, you know, wilding pines out of those alpine environments. Yet there are considerations being given to planting more of these areas in, you know, in different types of pine trees to help offset, excuse me, offset these emissions. And it's just, you know, on one hand, we're spending millions of dollars to try and remove a problem, while on the other hand, we're spending millions of dollars trying to put them back in again in a different area to solve a different problem. So we haven't thought about it well enough. We need to have a better balance. Pine trees are an important part of our primary production. So we don't want no pine trees, but we need to make sure we're putting them in the right places for the right reasons. And then we need to be utilizing the timber we've got and adding value to it. Sending raw logs out, you know, over to China and India and Indonesia is an absolute waste of time when we should be building furniture. Why can't we have IKEA here, who have bought vast swathes of our land, building a furniture factory, being the Southern Hemisphere's distribution point for IKEA?
Wouldn't you make that a mandatory thing? If you want to plant pine trees here, that's what I'd do. You got to create a factory here. You got to use the wood.
Yeah. And the thing is, we've already got the wood supply here. There's already plenty of trees, plenty of production forestry, so, and plenty of areas you could be putting these things. So it would be nice to see, you know, the government, when they are looking at this stuff, say, well, bring this in there, build a factory, and then we can talk about how you supply the timber for your factory.
Toby, thanks for coming on this morning.
Pleasure, Paul. Thank you very much for having me.
Have a great day. Don't get too close to the shore, though, because we don't want you going in with the sea level rise or the erosion.
Yeah, if you ever come up to our road in the last year, Highway 35 at Turi Hau, where I live, has had huge chunks of the road eaten by the sea. And have had to put massive big rock revetment walls back in again, which now exacerbates the problem in a different area because it changes the impact of where the waves are going and things like that. So, but hopefully not. They've just finished repairing the last piece after about 6 months of traffic lights on our highway.
Oh, and so, cones. Don't forget the cones.
Yeah. Yeah, cones are amazing. They seem to have bred themselves out of Auckland and carted themselves right around the East Coast.
Yeah, they're breeding. And don't they sit with the natural environment so well, with that lovely colour?
Well, this is how crazy this is. So the sea kept, they put cones in, and the sea kept eating the road, so the cones would fall in and sit on a rock bank. And so they just come back the next day and put more cones down. They didn't go and pick the cones up out of the...
Oh, come on, really?
No. Really? And this is us, you know, the taxpayers paying, what is it, $1.20 or $1.50 a day for a cone. My worker went down to have a look and said there's about 50 cones sitting on the beach. And these guys just kept putting more cones and more cones and more cones onto the road. It's absolutely nuts.
And it's environmental, from the aesthetic anyway, vandalism, just saying. All right, Toby Williams, Federated Farmers. Thanks for coming on, Toby.
Thanks, Paul. Have a great day, mate.
Yeah, you too.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.